Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. And a warm welcome to the show. Awfully glad you joined me today. Bill Arnold with you. We've got a great hour coming up. Rob Bluey from the Daily Signal will be with us in just a minute. And then Dr. Hugh Ross will be joining me a little bit later in the hour from reasons.org. He's a fascinating guy. All right, this caught my attention. In Colon, Michigan, Michigan resident Timothy Hochstedler calls himself the Amish Uber. He's not affiliated with the ride-sharing service, but he says he'll give you a ride if you can flag him down in his horse and buggy. $5 to drive you around the village of Colon. And he says his horse, Morgan, has way more personality than a car, which I probably would agree with. I loved Dr. Eric Bargerhoff. Rebecca, did you have a takeaway from that
time
with him?
There's a lot. And I love when we bring Eric and really anyone from that stripe to come on, because you can just ask all these questions. The thing that I appreciate the most this time was reminding ourselves not to put myself in the middle of a biblical interpretation. He talked about man-centered interpretations. Like when we're studying the Bible, we look, okay, what does this mean about me? What does it say to me? What is it promising to me? Instead of thinking, okay, let's open God's word and see what he says. It's not all about me, oddly enough. I mean, some of it, I'm included in some mm-hmm. of it. And I believe that there's so many passages where God talks about loving the world. That's me. I get to be in that. And that's an incredible privilege. But not everything is all about me. And so sometimes we just have to open up and have that humility and say, okay, Lord, what are you saying to the world? And how do I fit into that is the future question down the road. So allowing scripture to speak for itself. And maybe when we're confused by verses, instead of thinking about what I want it to say mm-hmm. and forcing it into that little box, to say, all right, well, I have a question about this. Let's look at what God says about baptism, about salvation, about prosperity, about abundance. How does God define that everywhere instead of just what I think? And then, you know, let him speak for himself.
Yeah, he's a smart guy. I sure enjoyed him. All right, we'll take a little break. And when we come back, Rob Bluey from the Daily Signal will be my guest in just a minute.
Warning signs and labels are everywhere. They're on the food items we buy, the medicines we take, and even on the shows and movies we watch on TV or cable. Hi, I'm Dick Whitworth. Wouldn't it be great if there were warning labels for Faith Radio? Perhaps one would say, prolonged listening could deepen your faith. Or maybe it would say, beware Christians under construction. Lives have been known to be changed through relevant Bible preaching and family-focused teaching. Or perhaps it might say, be advised, this station preaches that Jesus is the voice of truth. Sustained listening to him could lead you to become a true disciple and follower of him. Okay, we probably won't be adding warning labels to our programming, but God is using Faith Radio, thanks to you. If you're not already a member of the monthly support team of Faith Radio, would you consider joining? $30 per month or Team 360 is a great way to start. Please visit myfaithradio.com to start your pledge today. And thank you.
Games that make you the most money at county fairs are the ones where people overestimate their own ability. So I would like to start a game called, oh, so you think you're smarter than Rob Bluey, huh? I'd be giving out no stuffed animals if that'd be the case. He is my guest, editor-in-chief at the Daily Signal and my Washington, D.C. correspondent, with us on Tuesdays. Hello, Rob.
It's great to be back, Bill.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
I'd be passing out an occasional comb, but none of those expensive stuffed animals.
Good point. it is the season for county fairs, and you know what? I am so excited because this summer, and I'm jealous because many of my colleagues are fanning out all across the country to go to county fairs and hopefully take some good news with them about the economy and tax cuts and everything else that's happening.
Yeah. Well, let's jump into a couple of the stories. For example, now President is going to be bringing back some sanctions on Iran. I'm thinking, what are they? And I think this was, they were in the Obama era, and now they're being brought back. What are they?
Yeah, so that's absolutely correct. So your listeners will recall that under President Obama, there was the Iran nuclear deal, which with much fanfare and he and John Kerry, who was Secretary of State at the time, signed. What this nuclear deal did was what they said it did is it would prevent Iran from developing a nuclear weapon. But what it also did is it released a lot of money to the coffers of the Iranian government, which is a corrupt and dictatorial government, and in much to the dismay of many Americans who worked for years to prevent Iran from having access to this kind of capital. So what these sanctions do, these sanctions take aim at that capital, and hopefully will starve Iran from being able to develop and carry out terrorism. So it targets everything from the banking industry to transportation to oil. And, we'll see what the effects are. There's a first set going into effect today and another set of sanctions that will be imposed in November.
Rob, do you think that will get them back to the negotiating table?
Well, that's certainly the intention here. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have a situation where Iran has been propped up thanks to what happened under the Obama administration and has carried out some terrible activities in the Middle East. And what the Trump administration is trying to do here is to put the pressure on Iran by forcing the people, the key leaders in that country, to recognize how difficult it's going to be to operate if other countries, aren't able to trade and engage in commerce with this regime. If they feel that they're under the pressure and, want to remove these sanctions again, perhaps that will bring them to the table. At this point, it doesn't seem like they're willing to do that, but we shall see once the sanctions are fully in effect and they start to see the real life consequences of losing some of the access that they currently have.
Mm-hmm. Rob, I saw where Representative Steve Scalise was threatened by some guy from New York. Hasn't that guy suffered enough?
Yeah, it's a really disturbing story. Steve Scalise, of course, was one of the Republican members of Congress who was shot and came close to dying on that baseball field in Alexandria, Virginia last year. He's made a miraculous recovery, spent a lot of time in the hospital, and has returned to his position as the number three, the third-ranking Republican in the U.S. House of Representatives. So certainly a high-profile role in the House, and he and the number four-ranking Republican, Kathy McMorris Rodgers, a Republican of Washington State, both were targeted by this man who apparently was upset with the Trump administration's immigration policies and decided to take it out on these Republicans. And, it just raises the question that I think we just live in a society now, and you saw this yesterday with some of the video that was released of Charlie Kirk and Candace Owens, the Turning Point USA leaders, eating breakfast in Philadelphia, being confronted by a mob, bullhorns, water thrown at them. I mean, and what is are we coming to? And I think it's something that, obviously there are people on both sides of the aisle who carry things a little bit too far, Bill, but, I just hope that your listeners and all those other people out there who are involved in the political scene can take a break, take a breather, and, think before they take some of these actions, which are truly frightening.
I think my listeners really try to enjoy their life and try to do everything they can to honor God and bring glory to his name. I'm guessing that my listeners wouldn't be participating in that kind of uncivil discourse. I'm guessing.
Oh, no, I agree. I agree with you. But, I mean, Bill, I think that they need to take that message you said and spread that as far and wide as they can. And that's something that we're trying to do under the leadership of our president here with Kay Coles James. She is somebody who wants to build bridges. She mm-hmm. was just in Detroit last week and at the National Association of Black Journalists Conference. I can tell you there weren't a lot of people who necessarily agree with the conservative policies that we're pursuing at the Heritage Foundation and reporting on at the Daily Signal, but it's important to show up and have those conversations and have a civil dialogue with people. And so I really think, Bill, it's you and me who have a megaphone with a radio program and the Daily Signal, if we can set a good example and be role models for others, hopefully that can rub off.
Mm-hmm. Rob, obviously President Trump is a polarizing kind of person, and I know among evangelicals, there is a huge percentage of people that don't like his bullying style and his tweets and his, you know, they feel he lacks character, and you know, he's a challenging guy to talk about personally. Although some of the things he's doing from an issues legislation standpoint seems to be benefiting our country.
And that's a really great point. So, you know, it's one of those things when we look at from a policy standpoint and the actions that he takes, what do you want to value? And I think that this is what makes it difficult for some people with President Trump, because if you look solely at the tweets and some of the other things that happen at his rallies, it can paint a you know, troubling portrait of the personal attacks and calling, you know, the fake news the enemy of the people, and some of the harsh rhetoric that we haven't really been accustomed to seeing from the President of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes down to the actions that he's taking, whether it's on the economy or foreign policy, I really do think he has the best interests of America and the American people in mind. And I don't know how to, you know, tell people to navigate it. I think that you just need to stand firm for your principles and believe what you believe and go about living your life in the best way, in a Christian and godly way that hopefully brings hope and inspiration to others. And it's just a situation where again, we can't get too caught up in the tweets, Bill, because
yeah.
I think if we do, then we lose sight of the bigger picture.
Yeah. I mean, you do eye rolls occasionally, don't you, Rob? With some of these
yeah.
tweets. I mean, I thought the one about LeBron James was pretty silly. I thought that was, you know, incredibly unnecessary and not a good idea. As I think he was headed to Ohio to campaign for somebody. I don't think the action plan was very bright, but yeah.
Well, Bill, one more point on this. I think that it's also there are so many good things happening, as you alluded to.
I
mean, whether it's tax reform or all of the jobs that are created. We just had the new jobs report out on Friday. In many ways, I feel that sometimes the president is distracting from his own positive message that he could be talking about by raising issues that distract the media. And as we know, from the late night comedians to the Sunday show host, they're going to talk about the latest tweet. They're not going to talk about these other stories that the president would probably prefer they talk about.
That's a little self-sabotage for sure. So
right.
Speaking of good policies, let's talk about I think we're going to go to break here in just a minute, Rob. I want to set it up, though. I want to come back and talk about the prison reform bill. I think that's at a pivotal juncture right now, isn't it?
It certainly is, yes.
Good. Let me take a break. When we come back, more with Rob Bluey, editor of the in-chief of the Daily Signal, my Washington, D.C. correspondent. Be right back. Welcome back to the show. I have Rob Bluey on our studio line. He's editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. Go to dailysignal.com to go and see all about what they're doing over there. Great, some of the best reading material you will find. Now, Rob, right before break, I was asking you about the prison reform bill. Where are we at with that right now?
That's right. So prison reform is one of those issues that many people thought could get done under the last president, because you had a situation where Republicans were in control of Congress, but there were a number of people who agreed with some of the policies that the Obama administration had. So it's one of those issues that's carried over to today. You have the president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who's taken this up as a key issue, along with the judiciary chairman in both the House and the Senate. And so you have a situation where it's a rare opportunity to have a bipartisan victory for Republicans and Democrats in Washington, and actually achieve a policy that I think is going to help a lot of people. So not only is it a prison reform bill, but the new development, which is giving people hope, is that there's also sentencing reform. So obviously sentencing when you're in prison or jail, you know, is a situation where we've, you know, imposed some rules and regulations and policies in the past that have made it pretty rigid. And this new reform is going to open up the possibility for, you know, people to have a better outcome in their own lives. And I think that it's an area where President Trump, if he's able to get this done before November, can point to an issue where he was able to bring together both parties and accomplish something that isn't one of those party line votes in Washington, D.C. So we shall see where it goes. It's an issue we're following closely at the Daily Signal and have told some of the really heartwarming stories of people who've turned their lives around after being released from prison.
Mm-hmm. Rob, why do people keep falling for the idea of socialism? Is it because of the word free?
I think so. I mean, increasingly, I mean, you're seeing candidates all across the country who are running, you know, obviously on the Democratic Party ticket and winning in these primary elections because of some of the policies that they're proposing. I mean, they include things like free college education, a higher minimum wage, Medicare for All is a big one, Bill. That is something that we've seen really Democrats move away from, even Obamacare. They want a much more aggressive approach when it comes to health care. But we carried a column from the great Walter Williams, who is just a remarkable economist, longtime columnist, where he goes through and said, well, look, anytime you're comparing, you're painting this picture of a utopia, which in this case would be socialism, and you don't have any realistic chance of implementing it because there's no possible way the government could fund all of this. Of course, it's going to look good on paper, but in reality, it's just not practical.
Well, what about the person that goes to ER with like a stab wound and they say, you know, we'll get to you in about 6 weeks?
Well, right. I mean, there is that. There have been other countries that have tried it and failed. I mean, you look no farther. I think we just talked about Nicaragua, you have Venezuela. You have a number of countries that have gone down this path and really have suffered economic hardship and some consequences to their healthcare system and others as a result of pursuing these policies. But I'll tell you, with Bernie Sanders still remaining as popular as he is and him championing a lot of these policies, I think you're going to see potentially quite a stark contrast when we get to the 2020 presidential election. If this is the direction that the Democratic Party decides to go, you will have this battle between socialism and capitalism on full display.
I think you're absolutely right, Rob. And it's going to be very interesting because a lot of the Democrats, the traditional Democrats, are kind of pushing against the emerging socialist stars. I mean, I think from what I've read, that's the case. And they're apparently like this little fringe group on the side. Are they that way, in your opinion, from D.C., or have I got that all wrong? Because
Well, I think when you see people like, Alexandria, Ocasio-Cortez and winning and becoming so popular. I mean, there's a Netroots Nation conference, and you have people like Senator Kamala Harris talking about these policies. She's a California senator, so obviously the most populous state. In some cases, you could chalk it up to a fringe group, but I think that in others, they're actually gaining a little bit more momentum. They've been compared to the Freedom Caucus in the House. You know, will there be enough Democrats in Congress, in the next Congress, to be able to form their own left-wing group that would pursue these types of policies and push some of the establishment Democrats? It's hard to believe that you'd even consider Nancy Pelosi more of a mainstream Democrat, but compared to some of these others who are pursuing these policies, she and Chuck Schumer are facing their own resistance.
Mm-hmm. Now, Rob, with school picking up again in several weeks, what about the idea now that there's going to be drag queens coming in K through 12 to teach gender ideology?
Well, as a father myself, well, no, it's not a good idea. And as a father myself, this was very disturbing to read. And I know that the school district where my children are based is one that's on the leading edge of trying to do some of these radical, sex education type of initiatives. Look, this is a situation where I think parents need to be actively engaged and involved. One of the things that I think is so heartening to see at a local level is the enthusiasm among parents to take a stand and speak up and let the school boards know, let the superintendents and principals know that this is not okay. They don't want their children exposed to this at a very young age. And secondarily, in many cases, I think parents need to understand what their rights are, and they can opt out of these situations if they don't like what the curriculum is. They could also pull their kids out of school entirely. Let's face it, homeschooling, go to private school. This is one of the reasons that we're such big advocates for school choice, to give parents the financial option of making those decisions, because many times people just don't have the financial resources to make that decision, and they're stuck in a public school with some of these programs that they might object to.
Your colleague and our friend Jared Stepman wrote an interesting little story on the White House versus the CNN saga.
Oh, yes. Yeah, well... it gets more and more interesting. And let's face it, Sarah Huckabee Sanders standing in front of that podium in the White House faces a barrage of criticism almost on a daily basis. But what you saw last week with CNN and Jim Acosta, I think, was one of probably the more outrageous displays that we've seen. Clearly, Acosta seems to be on his hobby horse and wanting to make a stand. If you know, I were some of those other reporters in the room, and he you know, presuming to speak on my behalf, I know that I certainly would have had some words for him after the briefing. But I think Sarah Huckabee Sanders deserves a lot of credit for standing her ground. She obviously represents what the president stands for. She's not up there to give her personal opinion. I think sometimes people forget that, including Jim Acosta. And so the fact that, you know, she comes back to what the president says, I think irritates him and annoys him. But it's one of those things where we live in a very contentious period of time when it comes to government and the press. It's not unlike things that have happened in history before. I mean, you go back to the Revolutionary War and when our country was founded, obviously there was a contentious period of time there with the press as well. And certainly during the Nixon administration. But Bill, we believe in the First Amendment and the freedom of speech, and I think that this White House does, but it's not going to stop them from challenging the press when they think they're being unfair.
Mm-hmm. And then I think of Candace Owens, the African-American conservative commentator. She recently got blocked out of her own Twitter account.
That's right, she did. She took a page out of the book. The New York Times just recently announced that it has a new editorial board member, Sarah Jiang, who made some very controversial and what many called racist tweets in her past. The New York Times decided to stand by her. And Candace Owens basically took the word white, which was in Sarah's tweets, and Candace put it the word black. She is an African-American woman in her tweets. And subsequently was blocked by Twitter. She said that this just goes to show the double standard that exists between liberals and conservatives. And Twitter apologized and restored her account, but certainly one of those situations where conservatives have long complained about suppression on social media, and it seemed like this was ringing true.
Mm-hmm. Rob, Mrs. Bluey and the boys doing well?
They certainly are, yes. This is the last week of summer camp, so they are gearing up for the final days, and then we're looking forward to making a couple of road trips to see some family over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So it should be an exciting time.
So we will not have you on the program for a couple of weeks, but I'll look forward to hearing your vacation stories when you get back.
Well, absolutely. We're going to spend some time in Virginia and New York. Won't make it all the way out to Minnesota, but maybe someday, Bill, we can do this in studio together.
Rob, thank you so much, and have a great vacation with your family.
Thank you.
Yep, have a good night. Rob Bluey's been my guest, editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. Go to dailysignal.com to check that out. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute.
Seeking help should be the norm, not the exception. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with The Point. Cleveland Browns wide receiver Josh Gordon recently announced he'll miss training camp to focus on his mental health. Gordon has received multiple suspensions for substance abuse, but hopefully he's now seeking real help and heading towards lasting recovery. That's not rare to hear about professional athletes or celebrities with addictions. It's far more rare to hear them admit they need help. It's worth a look in the mirror. How quick are we to seek help for our addictions to alcohol, porn, losing our tempers? Why don't we? Is it pride? Is it shame? Is it fear our sins will become known? Many Christian leaders conceal sins only to descend into sexual scandal. What if they'd sought help and accountability early on? Seeking help should be the norm for believers, not the exception. And we can always be ready to help a brother or sister in need. That's the body of Christ. We are our brother's keeper, and our brother is ours. For more on faith and culture, come to breakpoint.org. I'm John Stone Street.
So glad you're with me today. It's 32 minutes after the hour. My guest, Dr. Hugh Ross, is founder and president of Reasons to Believe, an organization dedicated to integrating scientific fact and biblical faith. He's written, I think, 17 books, and awfully excited to have him on the show. Hello, Ross. Mr. Ross. Dr. Ross, how are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Yes, you got two first names, just like me. That's why it's confusing every once in a while.
That happens.
It does, doesn't it? So, fascinated with the way you think and the way you write, and your so I get your brain for 30 minutes. I'm very excited.
Oh, good.
So, as a scientist and an astronomer, I want to hear a little bit about your pastoral background, because you've put these two together. Nicely done.
Well, thank you, and it helps that I'm in a church that's halfway between Caltech and the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. We're also right next door to the headquarters of the Skeptic Society.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. So how long have you been sort of evangelizing, been probably doing this your whole life, right?
Well, since I became a Christian. I didn't become a Christian until I was 19. But when I signed my name in the back of a Gideon Bible,
nice.
I knew that being a Christian was I had to be committed to share my faith.
Mm-hmm. And Hugh, what do you talk about sharing our faith nowadays in a very hostile world?
Well, I think the hostility is what we should expect, given that we're living at a time when the majority of the adult population doesn't attend church, they don't read the Bible. They don't have Christian friends. So we should anticipate that they've got a lot of misconceptions about what Christianity is all about. And that will be manifested often in hostility. But I think we need to take a positive approach. Let's assume that they just don't know, rather than they're purposely misrepresenting what we believe and what we stand for. And I'm always a firm believer. Don't attack. Don't withdraw. Engage. Ask good questions. Find out what their spiritual state is. And the only way you can find that out is by asking good questions. And I found out people like to talk about themselves.
They do indeed. When we get into discussions about how old the earth is, and you know, you get into some debates with people about science for the evolution and creation approaches, what's the best way to initiate that conversation and keep it on track?
Well, I'll give you an example. I was talking to a scientist on board an airplane once, and he says, you're a scientist. How can you possibly be a scientist when Genesis says the world is flat? And I said, where do you think Genesis says that the world is flat? And he says, well, I don't know, but somebody told me that it does. Well, would you be interested in seeing what Genesis has actually got to say about the structure and history of the Earth and the solar system? And I said, well, can you give me an outline? So I give him an outline, and I say, do you have any questions? You invite questions. And that started a conversation, and he wound up wanting a copy of one of my books. And I said, well, I'll give you a copy of one of my books, but I want your feedback on it. Give me your critique. That's what I mean about not withdrawing, not attacking, but engaging.
Now, a couple of your books include Why the Universe is the Way It Is and Hidden Treasures in the Book of Job and Navigating Genesis. Now, you've already got us started with Genesis. Can you tell us a little bit more about that book?
Well, I wrote this book, Navigating Genesis, not as a commentary in Genesis, but as a problem-solving book, a take on all the big misconceptions about what Genesis says about science and creation. Basically explain to the reader, this is what it says. Here's some cross-references into other creation texts and other books of the Bible. This is why we can be assured that this is really the correct interpretation of what these texts are saying. And guess what? Advancing scientific discoveries, a firm that was written in the Bible thousands of years ago, is accurate. It seems like the Bible's got predictive power. If it's got the power to predict future scientific discoveries and it always predicts it accurately, what is your explanation for that? And so you're basically encouraging the non-believer, well, the only rational explanation, the guy who created everything must have inspired the writings of this book. And so you're inviting them to be part of the solution to what they're observing.
So how would you explain miracles when you're having conversations with people?
That frequently comes up, but I say, well, you know, there's one miracle in science that we can prove beyond any reasonable shadow of doubt, and that is that the entire universe of matter, energy, space, and time came into existence through the agency of someone beyond matter, energy, space, and time. And I'll review that evidence through observations of the past history of the universe. I'll explain to them that astronomy is unique. We directly access the past, and we can go all the way back to the cosmic creation event itself and actually observe the universe coming into existence. I'll talk about the space-time theorems, but what I'm leading up to is this. What I've shared with you is the greatest conceivable miracle that we can possibly draw from the record of nature. There is no bigger miracle that we could ever possibly establish through our scientific observations. If the one that created the universe pulled off that kind of a miracle, do you think he could do lesser miracles? And you say, well, what do you mean? Can you give me some examples? Which is where I can go into the fine-tuning evidence and make the whole point that there's a message in the Bible that the more we learn about nature, the more evidence will accumulate for the supernatural handiwork of God. Would you like to see some examples over the past 6 months how well we've been able to develop that advancing scientific proof for the accuracy of what the Bible teaches? They say, you mean just in 6 months? I said, it's literally happening every day. You say, can you show me that? I say, well, I have a Twitter site where I post an average of 3 to 5 tweets a day that give you links to research papers that give us advancing evidence from science for the Christian faith. Would you like to take a look at that? They say, 3 to 5 per day? Are you kidding? No, I'm not kidding. Check it out. And incidentally, you can scroll back and see how that's been consistent over the past 3 years.
That's fascinating, Dr. Ross. I love the way you think. This, I'm just almost taking notes as fast as I can. When you're having conversations with people, and they have a great esteem for science, and they say, "Well, I'm too smart. I mean, I'm too scientific to believe in God. And unless you can prove Him, I'm not that interested." How do you respond to that?
I'm saying, glad you said that. As a matter of fact, I had the same attitude, the same approach, and it was science that brought me to recognize that there had to be a God behind the universe, and it's my science that helped me find the one true message that comes from that God. Would you be interested in taking this another step further? I mean, the whole point is ask questions to see if they want to go a little bit further. I mean, literally, just 2 days ago, I was on an airplane. And, you know, this one gentleman looked at my computer and he said, you actually think there's scientific evidence that the Bible is true? And I says, yes. And he said, can I ask you some questions? I wound up having an hour-long conversation with that gentleman. And the woman sitting beside him said, can I ask you some questions too? And they both found out, have you written any books on this? And I says, yeah, I've written 17 books. Which one do you think I should start with? I wound up mailing each of them a copy of Why the Universe is the Way It Is, and yeah, I'm going to be soliciting feedback from them.
Oh, that's fantastic. So, I love it. So, as
well,
an,
I noticed something you put on the interview sheet you gave me. It's 1 Peter 3:15. Always be ready. And, you know, I've just, but I got a book coming out September 1st, which makes the point. If you will prepare good reasons for the hope that you have in Jesus Christ, and you're prepared to deliver those reasons with gentleness, respect, and a clear conscience, you will see God supernaturally bringing people across your path to hear and respond to those reasons. The first 2 or 3 times it happens, you'll think it's a coincidence. When it happens 100 times per year, You know that's the supernatural handiwork of God. And I tell people in this book, Always Be Ready, if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, and if you begin to put into practice 1 Peter 3:15, you'll see God performing miracles on a regular basis in your life, and it's going to encourage you.
Dr. Ross, as a scientist and an astronomer, can you give us kind of dazzle us with an example of God's handiwork from that that discipline, that area? Because I don't know much about astronomy, but I'm fascinated.
Well, I frequently get to talk to people who are in physics and astronomy. I think that's one evidence of the supernatural handiwork of God. How frequently I bump into astronomers and physicists. There are not that many of them in the world, but it seems like I bump into them all the time. I think God is setting up those encounters. But here's the response I get from those individuals. They say, if there's a God that created the Earth and filled it with us human beings, why all these useless galaxies and stars? I mean, there's 50 billion trillion stars out there. And why all that wasted space, all that wasted matter and energy? And so I respond by that saying, not one bit of it is wasted. Every star must be where it is. The total mass of the universe must be exquisitely fine-tuned if you want to have one planet, given the laws of physics, on which human beings can exist and thrive. They say, well, can you prove that? And I say, well, if you make the universe slightly more massive than what it is, then stars will only, if make it slightly more massive, when stars form, they'll quickly convert all the hydrogen and helium in the universe into elements heavier than iron. And in such a universe, no carbon, no oxygen, no nitrogen. Make it the tiniest bit less massive, when stars form, they only make hydrogen and helium. And once again, no carbon, no oxygen, no nitrogen. The universe must be exquisitely fine-tuned in terms of its total mass and also in terms of the size of the universe in order for there to be one planet with all the necessary constituents that advanced life needs. And they said, well, can you give me more examples? And I say, well, if we got time, I could give you 300. They say, you're kidding. I says, no, we have it all documented. Go to reasons.org/fine-tuning. That'll pop up for you a design compendium. It's 300 pages long, but you can go to the last couple of pages and get the bottom line, which is that over 800 different features of our solar system and our galaxy must be fine-tuned to make possible the existence of advanced life here on planet Earth. And the probability of this happening without the supernatural handiwork of God has less than one chance in 10 to the 1,050th power. That's 1,050 zeros after the one. To put that into context, that would be equivalent to you winning the California lottery 150 consecutive times where you only buy one ticket each time. Or as a mathematician friend of mine put it, it's no different than the probability of you winning the California lottery 150 consecutive times, or you don't buy any tickets at all.
Dr. Ross, you're making me wish I paid better attention in science class. I'm going to take a little break. When we come back, more with Dr. Hugh Ross. If you have a question for us, him in particular, 877-933-2484. You can call or text to that number, 877-933-2484. Otherwise, in just a minute, we'll be back with Dr. Hugh Ross. Welcome back to the show. It's 12 minutes until the top of the hour. Dr. Hugh Ross is my guest. And we're talking about some of the 17 books he's written, but also some of the articles that he's written. Dr. Ross, one of the questions, where did Earth get its fine-tuned supply of water?
Well, what's interesting about the Earth is how water poor it is. I mean, we astronomers are now discovering planets beyond our solar system that are about the same size of Earth and the same distance from their host star. And where we're able to measure the chemical composition, we're discovering they've got about 500 times as much water as the Earth. Not surprising, because water is the third most abundant molecule in the universe. But when a planet's got that much water, you're not going to get continents. And Earth actually started off that way. It started off with 500 times as much water as it has right now. But something called the moon-forming event, where a planet named Theia had a slow velocity collision with the Earth, and that collision caused Earth to lose almost all of its water and atmosphere, and also led to the formation of the moon. And the Earth wound up getting a little bit bigger as a result, and wound up getting enriched with a lot more thorium and uranium, which was critical to launch the plate tectonics that built up the continents. And so it's thanks to that moon-forming event that we have oceans and continents coexisting on the surface. It's thanks to that event that we have a small planet orbited by, a single gigantic moon. And it's that single gigantic moon orbiting close to our planet that stabilizes the tilt of our rotation axis and makes possible a stable enough climate that we human beings can exist and thrive.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, you can read an article. I put out a blog every week called Today's New Reason to Believe at reasons.org. And you can search for an article I wrote on the moon formation theories. Because the British journal Nature, a couple of years ago, devoted an issue to the moon-forming theories, and basically they were generated by the fact that our best theories had way too much fine-tuning design in the moon-forming event. And so the top researchers redid their models, made them more sophisticated and detailed, published the results. The fine-tuning design was orders of magnitude greater. And one of the researchers commented in Nature, this is causing us philosophical disquiet. Philosophical disquiet because it was eliminating naturalistic explanations for the origin of the moon.
Dr. Ross, I'm curious about a number of things. I appreciate the way you think about this just about any topic. But the one that I think comes up quite often is people look at a design in this world, and yet they still believe somehow it was an explosion out of some kind of primordial soup. How do you best argue that?
Well, I think you're talking about two explosions. One is the explosion that brought about the universe, and there I explained to people it's not an explosion like an exploding grenade. It's an incredibly fine-tuned expansion of the space-time realm of the universe. In fact, it's the greatest fine-tuned thing we can measure in all of science. And so rather than being something chaotic, it's incredibly tuned to make possible our existence. The other thing I think you're referring to is the origin of life. And we have a book on the origin of the universe, a couple of books actually, and one on the origin of life. Based on our staff biochemist, Faisal Rana and myself, attending Origin of Life research conferences. And what's interesting about those conferences, every successive one, the researchers there recognize they're in bigger trouble than they were at the previous meeting trying to come up with a naturalistic explanation for the origin of life. And the one we attended just a few months ago, five of the leading researchers answered the question, do we understand where the building blocks of life molecules come from? All five said no, but all five agreed we don't even know where the building blocks or the building blocks of life molecules come from. In our book, Origins of Life, we actually talk about the scientific evidence that there is no possible or even conceivable naturalistic explanation for the origin of life. We have yet to find any source of amino acids where all the amino acids are left-handed, or any source of ribose sugars where all the ribose sugars are right-handed. Matter of fact, we've not found outside of a living system any ribose at all.
So, Dr. Ross, one of the books you wrote, Hidden Treasures in the Book of Job, can you tease us with one of those?
Well, what you see in the Book of Job is the most extensive biblical account on the nephesh animals, a reference to the soulish animals. And what you see in Job chapter 12, Job says to his three skeptical friends, look to the birds, they'll teach you. Look to the beasts of the field, they'll instruct you. And what he's referring to is not just that they're going to instruct you about biology. They're going to tell you about us human beings, about God, and how God plans to redeem human beings from their evil. Because what he points out in his discourse is that these animals are designed to serve and please a higher being. Likewise, we humans are designed to serve and please a higher being. And our sin causes these animals that are naturally motivated to come to us and relate to us to run away from us. Likewise, it's our sin that causes us to run away from God instead of going towards him. And at the end of the book of Job, Job points out, that we humans have been able to tame all of these higher animals. Some are more difficult to tame, like the crocodile and the hippopotamus, and others, like the goat. And he says, like that with humans, some of us are difficult to tame, some of us are more easy to tame. But he says, notice this, it always takes a higher being to tame the animals. And the last chapter of Job, God jumps in and says, you've been able to tame all these creatures, but there's one species of life you can't tame. You can't bring humility to a proud human heart. Only I am able to do that. And he encouraged Job to pray for his three friends that they would receive the humility that God wanted to grant them so they too could be redeemed from their evil intent.
Hugh, if you don't mind, I'd like to take one call. We have Michael calling in from Lakeville with a question for Dr. Ross. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
Hi there. Do you have a question for Dr. Ross?
Yes. One time when I was at the Science Museum, I asked this question from some of the science students that believe in evolution, and I didn't get an answer, but I'm kind of curious. You talked about possibilities. So I'd asked her how long it took people to evolve and stuff, and I said, what is the mathematical probability that a male man and a female woman would evolve on the Earth and on this 24,000-mile globe, they'd find each other during the time era they were alive, and they would fit together to procreate? It just seemed like an impossible number. Then after she got done with that, I asked her, you have to multiply that by the number of bisexual species that have ever existed on Earth. But I was wondering if there's a mathematical probability for that.
Good question, Michael. Dr. Ross, do you have a thought about that?
Yeah, Michael, what you'll find on our website, and it's also in my book, More Than a Theory, is that there are many research papers showing that when you're talking about mammals that have an adult body weight bigger than 7 pounds will go extinct before they can evolve through any kind of naturalistic evolution. And so, for example, we have a dozen different species of bipedal primates that preceded us human beings, but all of them have adult body sizes bigger than 7 pounds. But it raises a question. Why would God create all those species before he created Adam and Eve? And actually, we have the answer in our book, Who is Adam? That succession of a dozen different bipedal primate species basically trained the large-bodied bird and mammals that lived around them to run away when they saw tall bipedals with weapons in their hands. And so what happened in Africa, when humans came into Africa, the extinction of large-bodied bird and mammals as a result of their presence was only 4.5%. In Australia, where they had no bipedal primates preceding human beings, the extinction rate was over 94%. Consequently, the Aborigines in Australia were stuck in the Stone Age because they killed off all the animals they needed to launch civilization.
Now, Dr. Ross, thank you so much for being on the show. Tell us your website one more time for the listeners.
Yeah, it's reasons.org.
Okay, thank you so much. You are absolutely a fascinating guest. I would love to have you back. Lots of questions. I think I understood roughly 41% of what you said, but that's just my problem. I gotta study harder. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, you're very welcome. Happy to come back.
Thank you so much. That wraps up our show. Thanks for listening today. Have a great evening, and I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.